From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here as we dig into some of the mysteries of the holiday season as we wind down the year 2011 and prepare for who knows what to come. In the studio with producer Hardwood Forrest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright. And you know, Forrest, you and I had a friend named Johnny Caps.
We did.
And all you have to do is say Johnny Caps and a smile pops on your face, because Johnny, he was one of those people who was larger than life, truly. Sometimes you say that about people, but he really, really was. You can't sum the guy up. You'd have to write a novel about him. Sadly, he passed away, I guess it's been a little over a year ago now, something like that.
Yes.
We used to go up there and spend time with him at his home, which I'll get into in a minute, and he would tell us about just, you know, the adventures that he had had his whole life. I mean, he was just always seeking some kind of risky adventure. And I remember one thing that he told me very sincerely. You know, and he, even at one point, he was interviewed on camera about this by our friends C. Eric Scott and Brett Clark, which I haven't talked to in a long time. You know, Brett Clark. So Johnny had told me that when he was a young man living out in the rugged terrain around Barnardsville, North Carolina, that one day he was walking somewhere, and he said had just crossed a bridge or something like that. And he looked over to the side and was shocked because there was a little man standing next to the bridge. And this little man was wearing a funny little cap and a funny little coat. And I think he might have had a walking stick or something like that. Does that sound right to you?
I believe so.
I'm just going off of memory here. And he was just oddly terrified to see this little man that looked completely out of place. And yet, at the same time, as though he fit into that outdoor setting.
Did he say the guy had dark eyes?
I think so. I think he said he believed it had kind of a Cherokee Indian complexion. And Johnny, he ran from this creepy little man. So now we fast forward decades later, when Johnny and his family decided to create this magnificent estate in Barnardsville called Greystone. And they went out there, this would have been, I'm thinking, like maybe in the late 80s, early 90s. And they bought a mountain in Barnardsville. And Johnny was good at working the land. And at one point, he was at the bottom of the mountain. He was about to do some grading or something like that by himself. And he looks over, and across the road, leaned up next to a tree. Now we're talking again, this is in the woods. The same little man is standing there, the one that he had seen as a boy. And when he saw this little man, just kind of grinning at him, he said the hair stood up on the back of his neck. And he didn't know why. There was nothing threatening about the little man, but there was a guttural reaction to seeing him. And so Johnny jumped in his truck and just hauled as fast as he could up to the top of the mountain. He got out of his truck, and guess what? There was the little man at the top of the mountain, as if he had teleported, and Johnny just ran into the house. And there were a number of occasions when this little man would appear. And I asked him, did you ever try to speak to him? Did you ever try to communicate? And he said, hell no. That just never entered his mind. He said the instinct that you would have when you saw this little man was just to flee. At least that's how it affected Johnny. And it's odd because it seems like that this little man had an attachment to him in some way. And again, he told this story in a very sincere manner. I don't know if many people believed him or not. But he is one of many people just in this area of Western North Carolina who have told me about these experiences with what they generally call the little people. And I have another friend who's actually a few years younger than me who was down by the river one day with one of his buddies, and he saw a little man that looked very much like Johnny's little man. But he and his friend, they were, I think, maybe in their late teens at the time, they decided to chase the little man and find out what the deal was. And they couldn't catch him. I mean, he was just fleeting here and there, and finally the little man was gone. And over throughout my life, I'll be doing, you know, a book signing or some kind of a program, and maybe I won't even be talking about little people or anything along those lines. But someone will come up to me and pull me aside and tell me about an experience with the little person, and they all have the same sort of trend. It's a little guy who he's wearing a funny hat, and he's just sort of standing there watching you. And as I dug deeper into this over the years, I realized that this is something that goes back just here in our country for hundreds, if not thousands of years. The Cherokee that inhabited the area around Chimney Rock and Lake Lure talked about little people there and how terrified they were of the little people. Nobody ever wanted to cross paths with these little folks for some reason. And I even talked to a woman who's probably now in her mid to late 60s who told me that when she was a little girl, she lived in that area around Chimney Rock, and she came home one day from school, and there were about three or four of these little people in her house. And she said that she, you know, stood there petrified, and that they were just sort of making merry of themselves. And when they noticed that she was there, they all just kind of went hopping off in different directions and disappeared. When you go looking back through the history books, I have here a book called North Carolina Legends by Richard Walzer. And this was published originally in, let's see, I guess from what I can tell here, 1980. And in here, he talks about the moon-eyed people that the Cherokee referred to. And the moon-eyed people may have a relationship to the little people. There we have the moon-eyed people. You see the chapter. It says, in long, long ago, before the Cherokee came to their homeland of great snakes and water monsters, to the mountains of blue smoke and sparkling streams, so say the old men, there lived in these beautiful hills and glades a race of men who were not Indians. These men had white skins, bearded faces, and blue eyes like the sky. And they were here even before the lusty Spaniards who came seeking gold. They possessed all the land from the Little Tennessee River to Kentucky, with a line of fortifications from one end of their domain to the other. These little white men lived in little houses of logs and mud dug out from the inside, and they never emerged from their rounded dwellings in the daytime because they were blinded by light. They came out only at night, in the dark of the moon, to hunt, fish, build their mounds and fortifications, and carry on warfare. During the full moon, they were stone blind, and so they were called the moon-eyed people. And whether or not this sort of thing is related, there are many stories about these little races of various people, some of them that go back, of course, to Europe. Even in my book, Speaking of Strange, which I put together when I was a teenager, this is a compilation of people's experiences, mainly who were residents of Western North Carolina. And there was a woman who submitted a piece I published called My Father's Little Man. And she told a very similar story about her father, who was in World War II in England, and how that he one day, you know, awoke, I think it was. I haven't read this in a while. Anyway, you know, no, it says the first time he saw the little man, he had a bad case of the flu, and he was trying to get rested, and he looks over, and he sees, quote, a very small man about 2 feet high, wearing Tyrolean clothing, short pants, green short-sleeve shirt, suspenders, a little hat with a feather on the side. And this is one of those deals where throughout his life, you know, the little man would appear once in a while. So it's a recurring theme. And, of course, we go back to Europe, and there are these stories about these various little people who live in the north that we might think of as elves. And apparently an elf here is a being of Germanic mythology. And they were originally thought of as a race of divine beings endowed with magical powers, which they use for both the benefit and the injury of mankind. In medieval Norse mythology, they appear to have been divided into light elves and dark elves. And as I started looking into elven stuff, I mean, the lore just goes on and on and on. You know, it's like people write books about all these different types of elves and their origins, and then it becomes complicated when it begins to become, like, fictionalized by people like J.R.R. Tolkien and his Middle Earth stories. And but all across cultures, there is this idea of little people that live in rugged areas. And so, you know, I was looking at all this, and I wonder, well, how did this morph into, like, the Christmas elf that makes toys and things with Santa Claus? And not only that, but you also have these stories we heard growing up about, like, the little cobbler elves that would appear and make shoes for poor people at night, or the Keebler elves that make cookies in the trees. I'm sure that's a real phenomenon, right? That's based on real cookie-making creatures.
Please don't tell me that's not true.
I've seen that on TV. It has to be real.
It has to be true.
It's true.
Yeah, I've seen them. So it says here, and this is just from, you know, looking up various information on the Internet. The Internets. Says here, a Christmas elf obviously is a diminutive creature that lives with Santa Claus in the North Pole and acts as his helper. Blah, 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 blah. So the modern Christmas elf, that kind of version of the elf, it didn't appear until apparently the 1800s or something like that. That's what they're claiming. That it appeared first in 1856 when Louisa May Alcott completed but never published a book called Christmas Elves. Now, Louisa May Alcott, she published Little Women, right? Mm-hmm. I never read Little Women. Did you read Little Women, Shelley?
I think I did.
It probably wasn't really about quote-unquote little women, right?
No. No.
It's just a coincidence that she wrote Little Women, and she also has a book about little Christmas elves. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, the idea of the Christmas elf and whether or not there could actually be something to this. And then we'll use that to kind of lead into my thoughts on what Santa Claus might actually be and some of the related spiritual figures like the Krampus. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. We'll continue this right after these messages.
Short people got no reason. Short people got
that's what I hear, especially in these parts. Something about these little people, these little elven creatures, is just frightening. You know, it just, it makes grown men who are well-armed flee. I don't know what it is about them. Is it that we are faced with something so elemental, so fundamental, so ancient, so wise? You know, in fact, maybe little tiny humanoid creatures are more evolved than we are. Because look at the dinosaurs. They were huge. They died out because they couldn't keep up with the resources necessary to live. And maybe we are going to die out and the little short folks are going to take over. Maybe that's what the aliens really are, little elves. Because I'm sure if you saw an elf thousands of years ago, well, let me put it this way. If you saw an alien thousands of years ago, you might say, well, this is an elf. Why not? It's all a matter of terminology. And that's something, you know, that's interesting. What is the story behind these creatures that have worked their way into our popular lexicon, but we don't know that much about why they are there? Talking about the Christmas elves, you know, elves in general originate mainly from European folklore, and they were introduced into the Santa Claus tale during the early, sometime during the 19th century in the United States, in some cases where Santa Claus himself is an elf. An elf's main job is to make presents, and therefore Christmas elves became a part of the American Christmas tradition that was exported along with Santa Claus to other parts of the world. However, Christmas elves in American folklore originated in Northern Europe, where the settlers brought the Christmas traditions that developed into the American Christmas and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I'm looking through all this stuff about elves, and man, it just goes on and on. But it says in different countries, Santa's little helpers, they go by different names. And you know what they call them in the Netherlands forest?
What?
Black Peter. And I had no idea. I don't know why they call it, if Rob from Holland was around, he'd probably say Zwarte Piet or something like that. Zwarte Piet. That he going. Black Peter. In Germany, they are Nachtwächter or something like that.
Nachtwächter.
Yeah. And in Luxembourg, in Luxembourg, they are known as Hoseckers.
Hoseckers.
Hoseckers. Yeah. Not a hosucker, a hosecker.
So Black Peter and Hoseckers are the same thing.
Apparently, yes. Black Peters and Hoseckers are the same type of little creature.
Really?
Yeah. Diminutive little things. In France, they call them Pierre Foutard.
Sounds French.
Yeah. I think my tongue just touched the microphone. Now I'm going to die. I have a disease now.
Yeah, put that little screen over the microphone. It might help there.
Actually, that's why I removed the screen, because that's got all the real nasty stuff on it. Yeah. That's just, we need to, like, take a sample off of that thing and put it in a Petri dish and let it grow.
Ew. Make your own life form out of that one. From an earlier story.
Your own little man. Here's the thing. When it comes to elves and Santa and all this business, it's easy for some of us to say, this is imaginary. But those people who have had these encounters say, no, it's not at all imaginary. And I, as you probably recall, several years ago, got a little idea. I was talking with Mobius about the idea of the tulpa, or a thought form that if enough people visualize something and believe in something long enough that they can actually externalize it and it will become real. It's almost like that we take whatever this thing is that is called life that we possess in our bodies and minds, and if enough of us just project a little of that into the same spot over and over and over, we give life to something. We, you know, something is born from our imagination. Maybe that's what Bigfoot is. So the idea was, hey, if this is true, if there are tulpas, then, which is a Tibetan word, is it possible that so many people believe in Santa and share this collective view of what Santa is supposed to look like and behave like, that we have manifested Santa? And to test this, I sent out an e-newsletter to thousands of people. Now, granted, these are already people who are inclined somewhat toward weird stuff because they're on my e-newsletter list. And I said, guys, I'm asking you this in all seriousness. Have you ever seen Santa Claus? And not just like, yeah, I was a kid and, you know, dad put on a hat and snuck in. No, do you believe you've seen Santa Claus, especially as an adult? And I'm not going to laugh at you. I'm doing some research here. And I thought maybe one person would give me a serious response. Instead, dozens and dozens of heartfelt replies came back from people saying, it feels so good to be able to talk about this and know that I'm being taken seriously. And these are people who told me, in many cases adults, yes, I have seen Santa, and this was not just a dude dressed up. This was a guy who had a sleigh and reindeer, and he flew off into the sky. I went outside, and I saw the footprints in the snow from the reindeer, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to tell, because how can you tell somebody that? I mean, just use your imagination. You see Santa Claus out there. Bells are jingling. Really? And bells are jingling. And you walk outside, and Santa Claus goes flying off. Do you want to finally come on the air and do you? Okay, there is a person in the studio. Now, do you want to make this claim? You really do. Okay, we have a person in the studio who has been in this studio for months and has never been on the air. Forrest, would you like to introduce this person, because we just found out she has seen Santa Claus? Is that right?
She claims to have heard Santa Claus's reindeer on the roof of her house.
Okay, well, introduce our guest, Forrest.
Well, we have my wonderful girlfriend, Kelly, who would like to speak to her experiences.
Sorry, ladies, he is taken. He does have a girlfriend named Kelly. Kelly, what happened to you?
I heard for years when I was younger, I would hear the reindeer on the roof of my house. And my mom would be like, if you don't get in bed, Santa won't come, because the reindeer are out there. And you could hear them, like, landing on the roof, walking on the roof. And I knew it was Santa Claus, so I've always believed in Santa Claus from that.
And you have no reason to believe that somebody was crawling up there and, like, scratching around to fool you?
No, not really, because my parents were.
Did you hear bells jingling?
What?
Did you hear bells jingling? Jingle bells.
I'm hearing a pair, so I didn't hear the bells, but
okay.
I would hear the reindeer.
So they must have been pretty pronounced then, a very distinct sound.
Yeah. I mean, it would sound like little hooves on your roof.
It was only
around Christmas, you know, Christmas Eve.
Yeah, so like, and then when this happened, did you stay up or did you run and go to bed quickly?
Oh, I couldn't go to sleep. I mean, I would lay there just, because I was, like, hoping I would get to see Santa come in my house, you know.
You know, that's kind of creepy, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Even as a kid, you're like, man, there's this dude in my living room right now?
It's messed up, especially because we didn't have a chimney, so I was like, I was thinking if he's getting in my house.
He had to squeeze in the pet door.
Possibly.
Well, that's why he's an elf. Maybe he is. Well, you know, I had an experience when I was a kid when I heard what I thought were bells on the roof one time. But, you know, you always question yourself. You're like, I was a kid. Somebody could be messing around with me. It may very well be that there is a manifestation that becomes physical at a certain point, and it's the manifestation of Santa Claus. Oh, man, we may as well go ahead and wind this down. But when we come back, it's one thing. And now imagine, oh, you're excited because Santa's coming and he's bringing me gifts and he's going to have milk and cookies. But imagine if it's the compass, and you're thinking, I might die tonight. My door is going to creak open, and something that looks like the devil, after he's been laying in the tanning bed way too long, is going to come into your bedroom. And, well, when we come back, I'll tell you more about what the compass does to you if you misbehave. You don't just get a lump of coal, that's for sure. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, the program where the unusual becomes usual. And this is what we call kind of a holiday edition, Speaking of Strange style. Song, it reminds me of one of my favorite Christmas movies that is a bit on the unusual side, because you don't think of it as a Christmas movie. You know what it is, Forrest?
Die Hard.
Nope. Gremlins. They opened up Gremlins with this song.
Did they?
Yeah.
The only song I remember from Gremlins is Do You See What I See? when the record player starts playing in the bedroom, that's the only song I remember from Christmas.
Well, he gets the Mogwai as a Christmas gift. What is his name, Pete, or something like that? And he gets the Mogwai, and then, you know, the whole movie, there are Christmas lights in the background, and it's a Christmas film. And I tell you what, later on in the show, we're going to play another song from a movie that I associate with Christmas, and we'll see if any of you can figure it out. I seriously doubt it. I will give you something free if you can figure this one out. I'm not talking to the listeners. I'm talking to those of you in the studio. The listeners will know. It's too easy. You know, when so many people listen to your show, it's just you're just giving something away for nothing, right? But, as far as the I tell you what, we'll talk more about that later. But it is kind of weird. Sometimes there are movies that I associate with Christmas, but I'm not sure if they're Christmas movies. You know, it's like I'd have to go back and watch them again to see if the story actually takes place during Christmas time. Anyway, let's get back here to the compass. We'll just go ahead and knock this one out, and then we're going to get a little update. I wasn't sure earlier if this was going to work out, but we're going to get a little update on what's happening with the way that some of the animals are being treated in the area. Those wolf-like creatures in your backyard. So we've talked about Santa Claus, but let's get to the bottom of this compass thing. Apparently, here in our country, if a child misbehaves, the worst thing that happens is they don't get all the gifts they want. Or maybe they'll get a lump of coal. I don't know if that ever actually happens anymore. But we are kind of spoiled in this country. It's kind of like I heard some comedian talking the other day about how in this country, we're always griping about how poor we are and how rough we have it. And yet, in this country, we have a game called Survivor. And that's every day in some country. It's a game in this country. Survive. Can you survive? So anyway, in other countries, you have it a lot worse at Christmas time than just not getting a gift, because you might be visited by something called a Krampus. Now, it's easy for us as adults to laugh about this, but man, imagine if you're a child in a culture and they say, look, tonight, if you're lucky, jolly old Santa's going to come in here and leave you some presents. But if you're not lucky, guess what that noise is going to be that you hear rustling around in the living room? It's the Krampus. It's this demonic, devil-looking thing with horns, and he is going to creep into your bedroom, and he's going to stuff your little butt into a sack and drag you off to his lair and eat you for Christmas dinner. Because that's what happens in places like Alpine regions, a lot of those Germanic regions. It says here that, and I'm just going to read this verbatim, the Krampus is represented as a beast-like creature, generally demonic in appearance. And he's so prominent in some of those parts of Europe that it's kind of traditional for young men to dress up as the Krampus in Austria, southern Bavaria, South Tyrol, during the first week of December, and kind of roam the streets frightening kids like it's Halloween time with rusty chains and bells. And it says, oddly enough, in this article I'm reading, that in recent years, these Krampus-themed parties, or what they call Krampusloff processions, have become more and more popular in various places around the world, including Boone, North Carolina. Okay, now it specifies like Portland, Oregon, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Boone, North Carolina. So I have, what the hell? Why are people in Boone dressing up like the Krampus?
The upstate kids have nothing better to do, I guess.
Would you call that upstate?
App State.
Oh, the App State. Yeah, I guess that's right. Speaking of a little eggnog, a little extra nog being knocked back there. But there are all kinds of what they call like Santa companions that are scaring children, and it's just something interesting to read about and take into consideration and ask yourself, is this a tulpa as well or something different? You know what? We have, just a couple minutes here before our next break. Let me go ahead and bring in a man that you know very well if you've listened to this show for any period of time. Mr. Mobius, are you with us, sir?
I am here.
Okay, great. And when we come back, we're just going to have a few minutes left in this hour, but I want you to give us an update on what's happening there in Henderson County with people who have creatures that look so much like dogs. Well, let me put it this way. Look so much like wolves that they have fur and ears and two eyes and teeth and everything.
And that would match.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Let's see here. We're going to talk about that, and also, I don't know if you realize this. I didn't until just earlier tonight. This is going to be our last recorded show of 2011. So hopefully you can hang on the rest of the program and participate a little bit. How does that sound?
Sounds like a ride I want to take.
Okay, yeah, because next time people hear us with fresh content, when it's not a best of, it will finally be that infamous year foretold and prophesied about for so many thousands of years. When we come back, I'll give you the update on what's happening with the animal situation. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You are listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. We call it Speaking of Strange, going out to all you high strangers around the globe. And we'll be back right after this.
the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news. That's right, things that are not for the kiddies or the easily offended. And right now, for this particular hour, I mentioned earlier in the program a story out of Henderson County that I heard about because I know some people who've been affected by it, and I thought, you know, this is this really happening? I mean, is this as strange as it sounds to me? And Mobius, you have looked into this. What is going on right now in Henderson County, North Carolina?
Apparently, kind of under the radar, they have passed some laws banning certain breeds of dogs, dangerous animals. One of those animals being a wolf dog. And to make a long story short, a person contacted us and said that they left their home for a period of about 2 hours. And they came back home and immediately noticed their dog was not in the yard. So their first thought was somehow it had broken loose and left. They got to their front door, and their tape to the door was a notice that their dog was in violation of county ordinances, and it was a wolf, and it had been shot with a tranquilizer dart and taken away. And this kind of surprised the people because the dog is an Alaskan Malamute, not a wolf. But when they called, the people said, it sure looks like a wolf to us, and that even mixed breed dogs that look like a wolf are now subject to confiscation. And this man was intelligent enough to say, wait a minute, this is a breed, it is not a wolf. And they said, well, does it have wolf markers in the background? He researched, and, you know, apparently a poodle is going to have potentially a wolf marker. All dogs kind of go back to common ancestors. And he said, you know, how much wolf, theoretically, does any breed have? So they wanted him to do a $5,000 DNA test to prove his dog was not a wolf. And he said, okay, but it's your job to prove, if you're going to put my dog to death, that it is a wolf. So they didn't really like this and said it would bankrupt the county if everybody had this intention. And they said, just, you know, normally, you know, we put the dog down, you called really quick, you've disputed it. And they went on and argued, and at the end of it, they made an exception. Since, you know, he knew some family member in another county who agreed to take the dog, they would just give the dog back and make all of this ugliness go away because he had raised such huge concerns that it would bankrupt the county. But now, if you have a Siberian Husky or an Alaskan Malamute or any dog that looks like a wolf, they can take it and put it down the same day before 5 o'clock before you know what happened. Welcome to the United States. We've gone nuts.
Wow, that is incredible because right now, I typed in Alaskan Malamute. I'm looking at all these pictures. This looks exactly like some dog from Call of the Wild or Iron Will. Clearly not a wolf. I mean, this is the type of dog that would pull a dog sled. I mean, you look at that, Shelley. Does that look like a wolf to you?
Oh.
No. And so you're telling me your dog looks just like, or this dog you're talking about here, it just kind of looked like any regular Alaskan Malamute?
Well, you bring the point up. This has become a subject of contention. Rottweilers, wolves, pit bulls. There are a whole bunch of online resources that ask you to pick the pit bull or the wolf or the Malamute from a set of maybe 20 pictures. And it is impossible to visually distinguish a breed. Some dogs may look like a wolf, but they're not. And usually it takes 5 or 6 tries for people to actually find the legitimate, you know, breed that would be banned. All the other dogs are not. They've been tested in the pictures and have none of the bloodlines. So the idea you can visually determine a wolf is impossible. But the person involved in this did call a North Carolina wolf expert. She took one look at the dog and said if it was a wolf, she, of course, would take it. But she said, I can't take it because it's not a wolf. When she said that, her professional opinion immediately became void. These people, they were convinced it was a wolf, there was no negotiating with them, and they weren't backing down. So like you said, apparently to be a wolf, you need to bark, have a muzzle, and two eyes, and that's good enough for them. You're a wolf.
Wow. See, this is—I think this should be a national news story, and I hope it gets picked up. And we're kind of breaking it here because people are going to freak out when they hear that your dog can be picked up and killed that easily. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be the Dark 30 hour when we dig into the crazy stuff happening in the world. And let me tell you, I've got a stack of it here tonight. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange, coming at you all around the world from here, the land of the sky, Asheville, North Carolina. We'll be right back.